Good morning. Welcome, welcome, welcome. How are you? Welcome to the roundtable. Everybody's, we're all talking. How are you? Everything going well?
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, we're on the air. Okay. We're on the air.
That's cool.
And I'll stop talking.
It's a very informal set.
Yeah, it is. We do try that. What are you all talking about? Judy was worried about Alan. She didn't want him to get hit by a car.
Exactly.
And, it's important stuff. I didn't want to interrupt.
David's always kept telling me, don't announce where you're walking. Some guy will come along and do something bad.
I felt like I was your mother, just saying, you got to be careful when you're out there and it's pitch dark. I know you wear reflective material, but I'm sure the roads are not, I'm not sure how much of a shoulder you have. And so,
well, let the record show that Judy Patrick brought up this subject, because my wife is no doubt listening, thinking that I did it because I'm on her for going out too early in the morning to walk.
Well, too early in the morning is not 4:15.
No, she's more like 6.
Well, no, but I would argue that it doesn't make a difference if it's 2, 4, or 6 if it's dark and you're wearing black clothing.
Well, I would make an
argument. He's all in black right now.
I know. He's the man in black. He's our Johnny Cash.
I would make. Oh, I love Johnny Cash.
I know.
And he was the man in black. But I would make a counter argument, which is, at 4:15, you see maybe one car. At 6 o'clock, you see a lot more cars.
You know what, Dr. Chartok? It just takes one car.
Yeah, it just takes one. It just takes one
frequency.
Well, that's right. There's odds. There's odds, but there's also odds that the car...
If I see headlights coming, let me help you with this. If I see headlights coming, I move over into the far grass.
You know what? It's like talking to a wall.
You think so?
Yes.
That's what you think of
me?
Well, you always have.
I'm poor Roselle.
good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable. I just want to start off the show by saying that we lost a dear friend yesterday. Sean Stone, who is a regular participant to this program, passed away yesterday at the age of 57. He had a battle with cancer over the last few months, and we're just all gutted. And he was such a great guy, and had been with us since the inception of this show. And we're just very, very sad. We're going to remember him in our 11 o'clock hour, and we'll do our best to do justice to his great abilities. He was a wonderful writer. He was an arts writer. He worked for Metroland and the Alt and several arts publications throughout the region, and was just a force. He's a very funny man, very sarcastic, very cynical, and all traits that I love and approve of. So we miss him horribly, and again, we'll be remembering him. There's a GoFundMe page on that dear friends of his are doing. Donna and Mark, who were people who took him into their home during hospice in his final hours, and another wonderful friend, Susan, all are collecting, trying to give him a proper funeral. And all of that, we posted this stuff on our social media channel. So you can find out information there if you want to find out more about Sean and how to help out. But we'll do that at 11 o'clock. So with that, we move on. And we talk to and welcome this wonderful group. I also remind you that you can be a part of the program, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. You are alive. You at least survived this morning.
No, I did. I don't know what you people are talking about. There's nothing wrong with walking in the dark. You have to wear a lot of stripes and the right kind of vest. You go to the hardware store.
You have to wear a lot of stripes.
You know, I go to the hardware store. They sell strips.
Oh, the duct tape.
Yeah, they put them on the back of your coat and the front of your coat.
Yeah, very fashionable.
And like that. And then if you see headlights way down the road, you move over. It seems quite clear to me.
Walking in the dark sounds like a song out of The High Anxiety that Mel Brooks would
yes.
be singing. No, that was Dancing in the Dark.
Walking in the Dark was Gershwin, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, and mother hen here.
Well, you know, he's going to slip and fall someday.
I've already done that.
I know, and you're going to be, when you're lying next to the road, you're not going to be able to get up when those approaching headlights come.
You're so right.
So walk in the daylight.
Thanks, Mom.
You're welcome.
Good to see you, Judy.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for being here. Ira Fussville joined us. Good morning, Ira. How are you?
Good morning, Joe, and everyone. It's nice to be here. Nice to be back in the studio.
Yeah, it's good. It feels right, doesn't it?
And condolences on Sean Stone. I didn't know him real well. We would pass each other in the halls here, and I found him always to be funny and friendly, and it's a shame to hear about it.
Yeah, very, very sad.
Yeah, what a great writer and what a great insight he'd offer. I was a fan of his writing and his coverage of the arts. Just wonderful.
He had this incredible ability to, he was one of the smartest people I knew, but had this, I learned this, I went to see him just the other night, and a bunch of friends were talking, and he went to Fredonia, but majored in political science, and was a real history lover, and that came through in a lot of his work. But I'll tell you, if you talked about 19, like the first silent film, he could tell you every silent film that came out in the year and the time, and why it was good and why it was awful. Usually awful in a social sense, but then he could also tell you about the new Jason Statham movie. So that was how great he was. We also welcome Malcolm Nance to the program, counterterrorism expert and author. Good morning, Malcolm. How are you?
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I too am gutted by the news about the loss of Sean. And as a person who's lost an immediate family member, a spouse to cancer, screw cancer.
Yeah.
It just absolutely is terrible. And, you know, I wish we could all, you know, get to the point where we could agree at least on trying to do a cancer moonshot. But it appears we can't even settle on putting on a piece of paper across our mouth to save our fellow citizens. So just terrible.
Yeah. It's a really, really good point. And it's, it doesn't, We were going to have that moonshot. Remember what happened to that? Biden was going to lead that, wasn't he?
Republicans.
All right, that, Republicans. Okay. All right, let's get started. We'll go to the news of the day. Very nice to have you all here. Thank you very much for being with us. We do appreciate it. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Thanks to both Ira and Judy for reminding me this morning that I hadn't sent out topics last night. I was a little overtaken by the news of Sean, and I sort of forgot that, so I apologize. So the panel got short trips.
So we're going to apologize in advance for being less informed.
Yeah, no, I know. That's fine.
Wait, you sent out topics?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right, so let's talk about the Biden agenda talks. I find this to be interesting because the article in the Washington Post is that President Biden abruptly accelerates his involvement in agenda talks. For weeks, President Biden has met repeatedly with Democratic lawmakers as part of the torturous negotiations over his agenda. Is that editorializing in a...
Yes.
Okay. Yes. All right.
But there's more of that going on now.
I wanted to check with the editors in the room. Okay. The torturous negotiations over his agenda, but to the frustration of many, he has revealed few options of his own on what should remain in the plan and what should be jettisoned. This week, however, Biden is doing something new, getting specific and plunging into details, telling lawmakers exactly what he thinks needs to go into the package that could define his presidency. In private meetings with members of Congress this week, Biden outlined particular trade-offs, explaining, for example, that he wants universal pre-kindergarten care rather than free community college tuition, citing research that shows money spent on younger children has more impact. He has floated the idea of giving seniors a debit card loaded with $800 to spend on dental benefits as part of an expansion of Medicare. He has revealed that he's feeling pressure from his wife, Jill, who teaches at local community college, to push for higher education spending, joking that otherwise he would have to find somewhere else to sleep. And Biden has stressed several times that lawmakers must help him show that democracies can tackle major problems, imploring them not to send him empty-handed to a pair of upcoming summit meetings. He was laying out what he wants, says Debbie Dingell, who met with Biden this week. It was clear what he wanted, and it hasn't been until now. Alan Chartok, I ask you the question of what it says when representatives who are meeting with the president, like Debbie Dingell, say it wasn't clear and now it's becoming more clear. Why do you think it was troublesome to get to clarity?
Well, as a 40-year, I think 40 years, isn't that right, member of the Senate, as a longtime member of the Senate, he recognizes that timing is everything. And he's quite a timer, so he always comes on. We know what his MO is now. He announces that it's going to be 3-point-something trillion, and then he cuts it way down. And we know from the first day that he's going high so that he can compromise and that that's the way politics works. You give the Manchins and everybody else a little bit of room, and they can go back to their constituency and say, see, look what I did. But he is a timer. He timed on his election. You all remember he was pretty well counted out. He lost a couple of primaries. He goes to South Carolina. He picks up a huge boost, and he wins the presidency. So I'm simply saying it is a matter of figuring out when he's sitting around that White House table with his advisors how they're figuring out how to play this and when is a good time to come in and what do you give up in order to get in. And so when he gives up on some of the major components, you got to figure that they're figuring where the votes are. That's where I'm at.
Judy Patrick.
The timing is eroding support for him. You could see it in the polls. You can see it in Democratic races all over. And from a communication perspective, can I just say that he is not a great one going out there and promoting this plan. I listened to him yesterday in Scranton, and I want the plan to succeed, but send somebody else out there with some conviction. He was like droning, and it's like, have I heard him say, it's just a joke. Come on, man. I mean, I didn't think he's doing a very good job of telling the American public what is good about this plan. He's kind of chiding us, he came across as not likable, and he needs to fix that.
Could I just point out, Judy, that he's the president and you're not?
I never ran, so there.
Well, that explains it. Yeah, but
I think that's interesting of chiding. That's an interesting way. I hadn't thought of it in those terms.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Alan that he has a game plan. He's been a negotiator all his political life, but he must have ice water in his veins because he has to be looking around and seeing that his approval is going down, and he has to get something done. So if he's planned this out to stretch it out as long as he has already stretched it out, if in fact that is what has happened, they must be very astute politically because they must feel that they can, whatever negatives have come out of this long negotiation will be turned around as soon as they actually have a plan and people start seeing, shovels in the ground all over the country. But right now he's playing a very dangerous game. And Alan, yes, you're right. He was elected, but he also ran against Trump, who his large favorability among a certain group of people aside is not very popular in the country, at least in terms of presidency. So it's complex, it's confusing, and I have said many times on this program and elsewhere, the only people who really know what's going on in the negotiations room are the people who are in that room. Mm. So we don't really know what's been going on. Debbie Dingell, I sort of like and trust. If she says they haven't gotten the kind of specifics until recently, then I believe her, and that's, I would think, dangerous.
We have just about 30 seconds, but you would also think, I mean, obviously this means a great deal to them, of these representatives who are going to be running next year for their seats, as to go out and to carry this message, to know exactly what the hell the message is. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. Malcolm, I promise I'll get to you as soon as we return. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick,
okay.
Ira Fussfeld, and Malcolm Nance. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll continue on this subject and move on to other stuff. First news from... Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our... discussion this morning with our terrific panel, Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Malcolm Nance, and Judy Patrick. We're talking about President Biden accelerating his involvement in talks about his agenda and about the Build Back Better plan. We've heard from three quarters of the group, but we have not heard from Malcolm Nance, so I turn it over to you, sir.
You know, I find it fascinating that for all the talk about Joe Biden being a master of the House and the Senate because of his time in both organizations, that he brought forward the infrastructure plan, which is great, and the soft infrastructure plan, which is equally great, the human infrastructure plan. But, you know, we're going into a general election in approximately 12 months.
Yes.
An election that appears that... multiple states, as many as 40 states, are rigging so that democracy just won't work. And I don't understand why the election reform, the John Lewis Act, wasn't where he should have expended his political capital first, principally because everything goes out the window if we lose next year's election. Everything that's passed, infrastructure, whatever it is, the Republicans have shown that they do not care about anything. They will strike down all that money next year, and then they'll pretty much end American democracy next year. And that's not a joke, and that's not me being hyperbolic. That's me being a straight-up intelligence professional telling you that, you know, we have one functioning party in this country, and perhaps we should have put our chips into saving the infrastructure of American democracy first.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I certainly understand what your hesitancy is here, Malcolm. My comeback would be, you know, this guy's an intelligent man. He's been around for a long time. He is playing with the balancing act of what he can get and what he can't get. And if you come away with nothing, you have nothing. So I think, you know, it is true that we're not in the room. We don't know what his plans are, but I have tremendous respect for him, and I think he's going to bring us where he needs to.
Let's go to some letters. Catherine says, I get all these texts from Democratic organizations pleading for money for this, money for that. Well, where are they? I find it confounding that there is no push out there for an ad campaign to bring people into the loop on this bill. That's a great point.
It really is.
It really is, because you do, a day doesn't go by that you have eight, you know, the latest poll show Trump winning and President Biden's message is being lost and we need your help. Well, okay, so if you help, where is that money going? What is happening?
Mm. You know, I get
journalists
a lot of texts from the DNC.
Yes.
And I never see Jamie Harrison on television.
Oh, you know, he's been on television.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he is.
We're on the same channel, so.
Yeah, not as much as Perez. Perez was all over the place, and I never thought he was a good communicator. I think Harrison is a good communicator.
He is.
But I don't see him that much.
I agree with Alan, says Deanne.
Great. Now, about what? I think this is the person who always wants you to read their letter. So she always...
This is Deanne. This is a different person. This is, I agree with Alan. For the others, it's the rest of you.
Yeah.
I get so tired of the panel and the media being so negative about Biden, all except Malcolm. Just because... Okay, so this is just for Judy and Myra.
Yeah.
Just because he has some self-control, unlike Trump, does not mean he has ice water in his veins. It means he can handle these things, unlike Trump. Please consider how all the comments about how bad he's doing can cause other people to believe that. But I think it is a fair point that both our panelists, all of the panelists have made, but certainly Judy and Ira, and also Malcolm, too, of okay, but you have this plan. It is your signature plan. then why are you having trouble articulating what you want it to be?
If he's coming across as a scold to me, he's coming across as a scold to a lot more people. I'm representative of a lot of people. You can't look the other way just because you want him to succeed. If you want him to succeed, you give him constructive criticism. They need to work on his delivery. He needs to stop. He needs to focus more on the positive aspects of this and stop telling us about how poorly we're doing in relation to the rest of the world.
No, he is what he is. I mean, he had that same, he came across that way going as far back as the Anita Hill hearings, which is really where I first, you know, zeroed in on him. But listen, I don't want to speak for you, but I suspect that you and I are inclined to want to see him succeed. And the fact that we're critical of him, we're crying out for him to do a better job.
I mean, would you want to have a beer with this guy? No, I would not want to have a beer with Joe Biden. Sorry, but I don't.
Really?
I would.
I don't drink beer.
No, I don't either.
I'm from Pennsylvania. I'd be having Rolling Rock.
Yeah, I would be in Scranton in a second. But I mean, maybe like after, like maybe on a good day?
Maybe on a good day, but he'd be telling me jokes about how his wife, he's going to have to sleep in a different room because he's going to cut funding to the community colleges. I mean, this is old, tired jokes.
All
sorry,
right.
But I want him to. Yeah.
What'd you say, Malcolm?
That actually plays. I watched that speech yesterday, and I got a completely different speech than from Judy. I thought that speech was actually very good. Because he's back in Scranton, it was the stump speech he gave that got him the nomination, and it plays in Scranton.
Well, I think we all agree that they have to get something done, and it's probably should have been done by now, but they have to show some results. And to the extent that it's because of the Democrats negotiating / fighting with themselves, you have that. And then to the extent that the Republicans are solid roadblock, there's that. But Malcolm's point is, in my opinion, the key point, which is if this voting bill does not get through, the game is over. I'm constantly amazed that people who are supportive of Trump are people who don't want big government. They don't want the government to mandate health vaccines, or they don't want this get this is where we're going. If Trump is reelected and we get to an authoritarian government, you're going to see stuff in this country that they and we would have never thought were possible. So the voting stuff is just imperative.
Do you think there's any chance your imperative bill will go through? Will get through?
Yeah, if they screw around and they finally do something about the filibuster and they swallow hard, understanding what the potential downside could be if the Republicans take over, because the potential of the Republicans taking over is lessened, I would think, if there is a voting rights bill that gets people out and does not provide roadblocks to people who are inclined to vote for people like Biden.
That's a lot of iffies.
Yeah, it's a lot of iffies.
All right, Gene.
Quick point.
Yeah, quick point or good point.
If imagine they get rid of the filibuster. Imagine Sinema and Manchin decide to act like Democrats, and that's a big if on Sinema. I'll tell you, I trust Manchin a lot more than her.
Sure.
I wouldn't be surprised if she secretly flips to the Republicans. But imagine they get voting rights through. Can you imagine the energy next year for Democrats? Not to mention that all of the Republican dirty tricks will be broken. And Election Day's a national holiday. It'll be a tidal wave, landslide, and we'll save democracy in the same stroke.
Which is why they don't want to do it. Which is why they won't do it, right, Malcolm? I mean,
yeah. Well, I don't know about the Biden White House. I'm talking about Democrats doing it. I mean, it's time to be as bold as humanly possible. Because next November could in fact be the last fair and free election, the last election we ever had.
You're absolutely right.
Not joking.
No, you're right. You're exactly right. What I really worry about is whether or not either of those two characters will flip. Now, we do know that Manchin has been making noises in recent days about flipping. He doesn't say going over to the Republicans, but leaving the Democrats.
Well, you know, about two weeks ago when I was on, I said there's going to be a rally in West Virginia that Trump and Manchin are on the same stage together, suggesting that he would flip. Mother Jones wrote a piece this week that said he was going to flip, and Manchin reacted quite vociferously that that was not true. So we'll see. He called it BS.
Did he spell it out, or did he?
No, he didn't. In fact, I was surprised that, you know, given all of the words that have come through on mainstream TV, they bleeped that out of the NBC report I saw.
Damn them.
All right.
That's a lot of BS.
I left my cigar in the saloon.
A couple of letters here before we go to a break. Tom writes, per Judy's comment about Biden's communication, which I 100% agree with, what do you make of the very little, almost non-existent public use of Vice President Harris? Well, we have talked about this in previous shows, but not specifically on this issue of the agenda and putting her out on the road and having her make the case for the president. Anyone have thoughts on that?
Can I tell you how annoyed I was yesterday by the tweet in which the president is going to her office and giving her a bouquet of flowers for her birthday? I mean, it was a nice gesture and everything, but that's the only thing I've seen lately. She isn't being used. And typically, vice presidents are, but you would think, given Biden's history as a vice president and his promise to do so, that he would have done so. And she's a far more articulate and persuasive speaker than he is, just saying.
Fiery.
I want to raise a point that we sort of brushed upon before, which is, why hasn't Biden gone into the moonshot cancer business with legislation and again challenged the Republicans to support something? I mean, can the Republicans also be against curing cancer? And if they are, what does that do to the Republican brand? I'm surprised.
Yes.
I mean, he mentioned it during the and I think you know a lot more about this, obviously, Malcolm, than I do. But he did talk about it during the campaign, but it has not been. I don't know that it has been mentioned. And I don't know with a pandemic how, you know.
Yeah. The polls show that this country wants this pandemic gone. So priority one. And I understand that. And, you know, maybe in the second term you can do the moonshot for cancer. But, you know, again, we have people who flat out refuse and are ready to go to civil war over, you know, taking care of their own health and the health of their own children. It's ridiculous. So that subject's off the table, I believe.
I'm sorry. You think Biden will go for a second term, Malcolm?
You know, if you listen to the Republicans, absolutely not. This was the big setup to put Kamala Harris in. But further to the point about Harris being essentially invisible, I think that is a critical, critical mistake. If he wants to have a second term, great, but he should constantly be pushing Harris so that there's a, you know, something happens, or if she has to run, and, you know, we should be lauding her. She did great in the campaign, but boom, invisible woman.
Yeah, and no offense here, Ellen, but he's, you know, he's still 78 years old. You would think just practicality.
A mere kid.
Yeah, but you would think you would put whoever your vice president is out in front.
I don't have the same sense that she's been put into a corner. I mean, when she's in Washington and he has a press event, almost always she's right there in the background,
just
as Biden was with Obama.
Yeah, five steps
in the background.
Back.
Yeah.
Well,
in
but
the
that
background.
Was that was where Obama had Biden.
Is she the last person in the room, as he promised?
Well, he says she is. We don't know.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back. We'll continue with our conversations. We have a lot of letters to get to. We'll get to those, and we'll talk about much, much more. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Clarence writes to us and says, it seems to me that we are presently in a constitutional crisis. Elections are continuously being challenged. Georgia and Arizona have altered election laws, and many other states are preparing to follow with either suppression or nullification laws. I'm not in the room and therefore not aware of the long game, but I'm concerned. If voting is not secure, democracy is in danger. That's a point you just made, Malcolm.
Yeah, and what's absolutely amazing is now yesterday in the United States Senate, in lockstep, all 50 Republican senators voted against guaranteeing the right to vote for Americans. Just, you know, at the last Voting Rights Act, I believe, was under George W. Bush, and it got passed 98-0. So the whole fabric of what is America and what is American democracy is under assault. And apparently the Republicans and the Trump Republicans have decided that, you know, a fascistic, one-way, dictator-backed view of the world is the way it's going to be. And if anyone votes out of lockstep, they get it. And that's, you know, the funny thing is they call us communists on all their forums. And it's really, you know, they're more like Bolsheviks than anybody I've seen.
Gene writes, if we lose voting rights, we lose our democracy. The filibuster has to go. Doug says, hopefully witnessing Republicans blocking the voting rights bill he crafted specifically to bring them on board will shake Joe Manchin's resistance to a filibuster carve-out for voting rights, plus add doubts to his calculations of possibly switching to the Republican Party. While Manchin may think throwing wrenches into Democrats' plans could help him if he switches parties, he should by now see that in the Republican Party, we have no independence and be expected to kneel to Donald Trump. Party switchers historically fail in their new party's primary. Manchin voted to impeach Trump. Trump and his cult will never forgive that.
Now, it should be noted that 19 states have, in the last year, have enacted more restrictive voting laws. And the federal law that's being proposed would allow things in New York that we don't even have now, including Election Day registration, early voting, a lot of easier access to absentee ballots. Even New York State doesn't have some of the things that the voting rights bill. It's something that people should take a look at because it would outlaw this idea that you can criminally charge an election worker for doing their job. And that's what's happened in four states in the Midwest.
Janice writes, if I was advising Joe Biden, I would tell him to do a primetime Oval Office speech informing Americans about what is in the package and how it will benefit their lives. I do not know why he has not done that.
Well, one reason is he wouldn't reach the audience he needs to reach because if he has it at 8 o'clock at night, the right wing is all watching Tucker Carlson.
Right.
Yeah.
So the rest of us are watching baseball.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, seriously, it's hard to get the message across to the people who need to hear the message when the people who need to hear the message are not listening or watching.
So, Ira, you think that the president of the United States would not, when he has a controversial speech, and this would be controversial, would not be put on Fox?
Oh, he'd be put on. Well, yeah. He may be put on, but they're going to just.
Yeah.
They're going to.
Just what?
Well, they're going to fact check it, quote unquote, and pile on before,
well,
during, and after.
I don't believe they carried his speech yesterday afternoon.
No.
Yeah.
No. I mean, they do the primetime addresses,
yeah,
and the address to the nations. They do. But it's within the context of those shows, too, of Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. And then you come out of it with the commentary of, can you believe he just said that?
I can't remember if it was a Biden speech, but didn't they do something once where they played an event live and then had a little box with Tucker Carlson in the corner reacting facially, as
yes,
he always does?
Yeah.
It's just so nasty and demeaning.
Let's see. Mike writes to us and says, Joe Manchin came up with a voting rights bill that he, quote unquote, thought was bipartisan and could get at least 10 Republicans to go along with it. He found out how much bipartisanship the Republicans were willing to go along with. Zero. Zilch. Donata. I wonder if Manchin might come to realize that there may have to be some modification to the Senate filibuster rule, at least make them get up and talk like Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Whenever we talk about the film, I have to go to Alan.
Well, look, you know, doing away with the filibuster, modifying the filibuster, doesn't do away with the idea that if the Republicans take over the United States Senate, do you really expect that you're going to be happy about having pushed the filibuster the way that you're doing right now? Now, I think it's worth a gamble. I think it's worth a gamble. It might open up the government, and it might help. On the other hand, it might also lead to the collapse of democracy.
But if they change the filibuster to the benefit of the Democratic agenda now, at, with the risk that they could lose the their power and the Republicans would turn it around, I would argue it's a risk worth taking because they might well win back the seats that they're fearful of losing if the filibuster and the voting rights bill changes the dynamic.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you, Ira, because I agree with what you're saying. In other words, I think there's a risk in a filibuster, a big risk. But on the other hand, there's a big risk by not doing it.
Yeah, but if they don't do it,
and not progressively passing.
Right. If they don't do it, it seems like they're really casting their future in the wrong direction. If they do do it, they've got a fighting chance not to do that.
I'll write you from Costa Rica, which is where I'll be going.
Is that your safe space?
I'll let you know.
How important, I'm getting a little bit off subject here, but how important is it that of what happens next Tuesday in the Virginia race? If McAuliffe loses and you attribute that to coattails or lack of coattails for the president of the United States, what does that do for the quote-unquote whatever momentum there is to get the Build Back Better plan through?
It's huge. And if your natural constituency, the Biden natural constituency, doesn't come out and doesn't say this is worth it, Virginia could really hurt.
But didn't they say the same thing about the California recall vote? And that came out well for the Democrats, and the positive momentum has kind of dissipated.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, but we always have to turn out. That's the point.
Yeah.
If we don't turn out, it's time to teach the Democratic base that elections really do matter. And I think we got it in 2020, and I think we're going to get it. We've got it in these gubernatorial races. But the guy running for governor of Virginia is essentially saying he's going to turn it into Florida and Texas.
That's right.
So the stakes are very high. I think the Virginians will turn out, though.
So what's really going on here, Malcolm?
What's really going on here?
Yeah, what's really going on?
It's as simple as this. The Republicans are shooting now. They're putting all of their bets on getting to next year, having suppressing Democratic turnout, having motivated turnout, and then that will be it. From that point onward, every election will be rigged. All that local control will get rid of ballots from Democrats. They've already gerrymandered. They gerrymandered in the state of Texas down to zero representatives
right.
in the state of Texas. They've gotten rid of for African Americans. There is zero African American.
And by the way, Malcolm, they did it 10 years ago, too. And they got rid of some of the most remarkable congresspeople you ever saw. They just know how to draw the line.
One change to the filibuster. And, back to your previous point about the filibuster, the Republicans have no intention from this point onward ever, ever playing fairly and by the rules. They've made that clear with their legal changes, their worshiping of Trump. The fact that they would rather get rid of American democracy, as Thomas Ricks said, if they can't have their America, they don't want America. So the game plan is simple, but Democrats are operating like it's business as usual when we're in a hair-on-fire situation where everything can be lost. This is the extra innings from the 2020 election. And it's going to, I hope it doesn't end up like the World Cup, right, where you just got to kick, individual balls at each other. And then the one who gets the score wins everything.
This is my gift to you, Malcolm, just for being you. It's a listener letter that says, assuming a civil war is predominantly a red versus blue paradigm, Malcolm, what does a civil war in a country like ours look like when so many states are split so close down that line?
Okay. There's not going to be any civil war, all right? I just wrote a 120,000-word book on an insurgency, which is principally political, where you decide to take the political fight out onto the streets.
Yeah.
And it disrupts at the state level. And you may have some states which may want to, foster that environment. But, the president of the United States controls the National Guard. all of these armed forces bases around the country are in control. So I suspect what we'll have if Donald Trump loses or if the Republicans lose in 2022 and they want to get froggy, there are individuals that keep writing, and I'm monitoring their chat room. What's the breaking point? That's the phrase I see a lot. And the breaking point for many of them is, you know, that Donald Trump doesn't get reinstalled back in the government. So if that happens, it's going to get swatted down really quickly, principally because the police, despite what a lot of people think, they're a very jealous organization. They love to be the arbiters of what is and what isn't allowed. And so anyone that goes into armed violence is going to be met with counterforce at a level they can't even imagine. Civil war, that's not going to happen. This isn't 1860. We have capacity, and the army isn't going to split, right? General Milley proved that. People who want to, who think that they're going to take over sections of counties and things like that, they'll be rolled up rather quickly. And we have to deal harshly with them. I mean, we should be giving out higher prison sentences for the Capitol insurrection, but we'll see.
All right, we'll pause there. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will return and continue our conversation. We have letters. We welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll move on to other topics as well. Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Judy Patrick, Ira Fussfeld, all here. We'll go to some breaks and then news with Ray Graff. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you all with us. We have a great panel here. We have Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Judy Patrick, and Ira Fussfeld. And, of course, we welcome your letters. We have quite a few of those. So we'll begin with one from Josh, who says, Malcolm does realize Stacey Abrams still has not conceded. And Hillary Clinton just the other day stated that the governor election in Georgia was stolen from her. My point is not a one-way street, the big lie, et cetera. Democrats have done a fair amount to have the public's confidence in fair elections reduced as well. Oh, Malcolm.
Sorry about that. I'll tell you one thing we didn't do. We didn't try to overthrow 245 years of American democracy. Mm-hmm. People can always complain about elections. Some people don't concede. But when you attack it directly, and that's what's happened here. And I get a lot of this from my Republican friends from where I live down here in Columbia County. I have to explain to them. They go, it was just a protest. No, it was a direct attack with the intent to knock down the certification to put Donald Trump into the presidency illegal. That's it. That's where all comparisons end. So there is no, you know, he said, she said, 50-50, both sides do it thing here. We have one party right now that does not believe in American democracy, and some people, some elements, are willing to be violent to do it.
We got this from Lynn, who says, I love when Malcolm Nance is on the show and everything he's saying about voting rights and the filibuster are correct, but in his comments on the potential for a civil war, I would point him to an article in The Intercept which details how Daniel Baker, a Florida man, posted on Facebook telling anti-fascists to be ready to arm themselves if right-wing people descended on their state houses the way they did on the U.S. Capitol. Alan, you think that's...
So ask yourself this question, folks. Knowing what you now know about Donald Trump, his utterances, his threats, standing down there on Pennsylvania Avenue and saying, everybody get up to the Capitol and fight like hell and doing all that, are you telling me that you think this guy would not resort to a civil war if he thought he had the warm bodies and others to do it? I say he would, and that he may well do that.
Can I address that article at The Intercept?
Yes.
First off, yeah, I know it. I read it. There are these people out there who have invested, including Glenn Greenwald's The Intercept, in making it appear as if the left is as well-armed and as violent and as prepared, and that Antifa, which is a nebulous term for anyone who's against fascism, including the, 82nd Airborne and everyone who landed at Normandy on D-Day, are preparing for this stuff. One or two people, I know out in the Pacific Northwest where people were asking me for advice, they were doing these armed security teams, one or two guys, and I flat out said, no one who is on the who is against the administration, who is in the center, who stands for democracy, no one should be arming themselves for anything or bringing weapons on the street. Just because the right wing doesn't mean that normal people should do that. We are not in a civil war. We should not be preparing for that. I get people who ask me, because I'm a big gun guy, they ask me, oh, can you give training to black people? No. All of you need to go out and read your pocket constitution or go out and read the Federalist Papers. Do something to better educate yourself to understand why you need to vote.
Wait. Are you telling me, Malcolm, my dear friend, are you telling me that you don't think that there's a possibility of civil war? In other words, the question is, no, there's not going to be a civil war, and the Republicans under Trump will not create a civil war themselves. Are you telling me you think that that is out of the question?
No. And again, I just finished a book, which the title is They Want to Kill Americans. There is an element within the country, and certainly the Republican Party has radicalized to the point where some people, those people who are wholly ignorant of what civil war and insurgency is about, who think that just because they own guns and they've never served in the military and they're itching to get out and do something that makes them feel like they're part of the cast members of the movie 300. And opposing what they think the liberal tide is, and that they're going to do it with their AR-15 when they can barely waddle their way to a McDonald's.
Quite a picture you paid there, Malcolm.
Well, I see these guys. I went to a training course in Ohio in August, and out of the 9 people in this training course, which involved firearms, I was the only person with any military or law enforcement background. The other 8 were just civilians with guns who wanted to do all this cool guy stuff. I've trained virtually everybody in New York State, Homeland Security and State Police and Intelligence. And let me tell you something. Nobody's doing nothing. If they want to come out and do violence, the counter violence that can be brought down at the county, state, and national level is devastating. So if we keep talking about it as it's inevitable, well, some people will get that impression. It's not inevitable. I'll tell you right now who's the bulwark against the Civil War is Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin. And as soon as we get rid of the voting rights, execute voting rights and make these things law, there is no way that anyone can publicly advocate for that, because then the elections will be free and fair. And if they want to get into it, well, there's resources out there to resolve the issue.
Let me roll through some letters, and then we'll move on to other subjects here.
Can I just say one more thing?
Of course.
January 6th.
Right.
Well, I was going to – I'm encouraged by what Malcolm said, because I thought I was expecting him to be a little bit more pessimistic than he is describing this morning. But I'm wondering if there are 10, 20 kinds of insurrection-like acts at the state capitol buildings around the country. We're not talking about the Confederates versus the Union, but we're talking about the individual basis. Would you not describe that as a civil war?
And this is what my book is about. It was called The Coming Trump, describing the groups of the coming Trump insurgency. We had to remove the word coming. The insurgency is here. An insurgency is a series of insurrections. And it's quite possible they could happen. But those people who might find some sympathy at the governorate level in some of these states, they're going to have to defy the United States. And, the National Guard does not belong to the states if the president so chooses. And the military members will not support a rogue governor or a rogue county sheriff, constitutional right-wing, sheriff who decides he's the new law for their area. Again, they use violence. We have the capacity for counter-violence to resolve the issue once and for all.
Judy?
Well, we had that capacity on January 6th, and the people who they waddled up to the U.S. Capitol, and the mob mentality that overtook that day was scary. And if it happens at every state capitol, I agree that there are protections in place. I'm not that worried about a civil war, but man, that mob mentality, average people. And you know, maybe good-hearted people, or they had the best of intentions, and then things went really badly. Really
Did you
quickly.
Read that profile of the New York Times of the seven or nine of powerful stuff?
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. I've been in a mob in a combat zone. Mobs are not people. Mobs are these out-of-control tsunamis of humanity, and they often get gunned down. It was the greatest control that the Capitol and D.C. police showed on that day. And to be quite honest, I think that shooting Ashley Babbitt broke the incentive of the mobsters to continue on into the building.
All right.
It's been much worse.
Let's go to other letters. Leslie says, people who call January 6th a protest seem to conveniently forget that the permit did not allow the mob to enter the grounds around the Capitol. Not only did they break through the fencing, they broke into the building and caused a huge amount of damage, both inside and out. This was an attack on our democracy. I mean, damage to human beings as well, we should note.
Well said.
Jack said, authoritarian snap decision-making, as George W. once called it, going with my gut, provides instant gratification and a sense of accomplishment. We got it done. Negotiations and compromise take time. It's messy and always frustrating. However, the results are far more effective, longer-lasting, and generate a sense of accomplishment for all involved. Not just the primary proponents, but the supporting participants as well. It is always the more effective process, despite the pitfalls. The current process of give and take will lead to real results, and all the messiness will soon be forgotten when people begin to benefit from the outcomes. Something to remember? The great American humorist George Will once said, "I don't belong to any organized political party. I am a Democrat." I think that was actually...
It was.
I don't think it was George,
George
Will.
It wasn't George Will. No. I think it was Will Rogers.
Yes. It was.
Right. Will Rogers, yes.
Right. Yeah, Will Rogers.
Although, calling George Will a great American humorist, because no one is quite as chuckle-inducing as George Will, who is one of my favorite... He was just on the show. He's a great guest.
I actually had lunch with him at a publisher's meeting once, and we spent the whole time talking about the Cubs. So.
Yeah, well, he's a baseball guy. Yeah, that's what he likes to talk about. Dear Malcolm, we do need a civil war. This time, it will be the traitorous, ignorant, greedy, selfish, hateful MAGAs against... The real Americans who are multiracial, multi-ethnic women, children, non-religious, atheists, trans, LGBTQ, hardworking immigrants who all believe in the democratic American dream of love, empathy, humility, humaneness, and equality that made America a shining light throughout the world. I'm 76 and would be proud to fight and rid our country and the world of these MAGAs, who are nothing but an evolutionary defective species that dare to call themselves human beings.
I don't believe this person is really a Democrat or an independent against the Republicans. That's the sort of things that you sort of see on these, Patriots.win and Donald.win websites. But I do want to read one of my favorite quotes, which was in my last, which is in the book that I just wrote on the coming insurrection. And it was from Ulysses S. Grant. And he said, if there were to be a second civil war, it would be between the forces who believe in these ideals and who would fight to protect them and forces who were not. The ideals were, on one side, the forces of ignorance and hatred against the forces of reason and the Constitution.
Betsy.
So, no civil wars, you guys. Stop talking about it.
Betsy writes, if we don't pass voting rights, democracy will be over, period. This is really the only chance. Last night, Rachel Maddow had on Angus King, who is slowly coming around to the idea of a carve-out for voting rights for the filibuster. It is astounding how slow these long-term senators It is astounding how slow these long-term senators are taking to realize that the GOP are really fascists and their party could end our democracy. The rest of us have seen it, but they are just slowly realizing it. And this idea, if we end it, they will also end it? What's to stop them if they want to end it next time anyway? Then we go to Russ. I don't see tinkering around the edges as the way to address the filibuster problem. The filibuster problem could be solved if bills subject to filibuster in one session of Congress were exempt from filibuster in the next. In that way, parties expecting to remain in the minority in the next session would be willing to compromise, while in any case, after 2 years, the majority would rule. Then Peter says, as Pulitzer Prize winner Chris Hedges states, don't expect Biden to be the modern FDR because he's not. He continues to act as if there are still reasonable Republicans. There are none. And his misplaced belief in the wisdom of the American voters is sorely misplaced. The failure of the Democrats as a whole to support his agenda further weaken his capacity to enact legislation that is badly needed to save this country. As a Democrat, I worry that we are on a road to Republican control of the Senate and then the presidency. If this happens, the Democrats have no one to blame but themselves, including Joe Biden. Then we go to Ann. If the Democrats want to win over Joe Manchin, the Democratic Party should be educating the West Virginia voters about the dangers to themselves, their families, and their communities, particularly regarding climate, if the larger bill is not passed. Yes, West Virginia has been known as a coal state, but has been becoming less so over many years. Most people in the state don't earn their living from the coal industry. The cost of transitioning the coal industry over to green energy is much less than devastation from climate change that has ravaged the state and will continue to do so in the future. West Virginia has more flooding than any other state in the country, and some of this is caused by surface mining.
Well, didn't Bernie try to do that? Bernie published an op-ed in the Charleston paper, and Manchin jumped all over him for being an interloper.
Suzanne writes, worrying about what the Republicans will do if the filibuster goes over. Overlooks the fact that the Republicans will remake it for their purposes no matter what. All right. Those are the letters at the moment. Let's move on to other stuff.
Can I squeeze in one that's peripheral?
Of course.
What do you guys think about this new venture that Trump announced last night?
The social media venture?
Social media. Yeah, well, that's sort of what I think, but I wanted
This is brilliant. It's called Truth.
Right.
And in its original Russian, it's Pravda.
I'm sorry.
Soviet newspaper,
I must have been sleeping since I got to sleep at 6 o'clock. What was the utterance?
So Trump announces this launch of this media company. It's a social media site. This is 9 months after, of course, being thrown off of Facebook and Twitter and the like in his role for inciting the January 6th riot. So the Trump Media and Technology Group, yes, that's what it's called, and its Truth Social app is to create a rival to big tech companies that have shut him out and denied him the megaphone that was paramount to his national rise. The statement that he said... the statement accompanying this announcement. We live in a world where the Taliban has a huge presence on Twitter, yet your favorite American president has been silenced.
That's a great line.
Who is my favorite American president?
This is unacceptable.
Lincoln.
Conservative voices.
Lincoln has been silenced.
Conservative voices actually do well on traditional social media. On Wednesday, half of Facebook's top 10 performing link posts were from conservative media commentators or politicians, according to a daily list compiled by the New York Times technology columnists and an internet studies professor using Facebook's own data. Trump has spoken about launching his own social media site ever since he was barred from Twitter and Facebook. An earlier effort to launch a blog on his existing website was abandoned after the page drew dismal views. TMTG has not set its sights low. In addition to the Truth Social app, which is expected to soft launch next month with a nationwide rollout early next year, the company says it's planning a video on demand service dubbed TMTG Plus that will feature entertainment program, news, and podcast. You have to wonder what their idea of entertaining is.
Well, you know, the executive producer or the guy who's running the company, I believe, comes from Deal or No Deal. That's his background.
Oh, was he the guy that you can never see, the sort of the shadow,
the banker?
Yeah.
Could be.
One slide in a TMTG presentation on its website includes a graphic of TMTG's potential competitors, which range from Facebook and Twitter to Netflix and Disney Plus to CNN. The same slide suggests that over the long term, TMTG will also become a power in cloud computing and payments, and suggests it will go head-to-head with Amazon, Microsoft, Google, and Stripe. This all comes also in the day that Mark Zuckerberg announced that Facebook would most likely be changing its name. So.
Well, it's
you brought it up, Ira.
Yeah, no, I think Malcolm hit it on the head. It's Pravda, and it's if it wasn't so serious, it would be funny. And unfortunately, it will probably have a modicum of success. And if there is a fee involved with it, you know who's going to pay, and they're going to make a lot of money. A lot of money is going to come in, and Trump will benefit whether he does politically or not. So. But it's just,
well, I heard that about a casino once.
Yeah, I guess.
And a casino is literally a mint. He failed at
and
that.
He failed
this
at
is going to be a disaster, yeah. Especially when the term Pravda starts taking hold.
Yeah, we're all chuckling about this because we understand that it takes a lot of resources, a lot more money than $300 million. Is that how much he's raised to start a venture like this? I mean, Oprah Winfrey tried to do this and failed. This is a Twitter wannabe, and appears to be, according to the app that surfaced last night, and. It's not going to go anywhere because he doesn't have the audience. It takes a long time. Facebook is Facebook for a reason. And people have tried to challenge Facebook with no success. Trump is not a great businessman. He has never been a great businessman. And this, he's trying to do too much. He's throwing at he thinks he can do everything all at once, and he can't do it. It's just too complicated. He may have a little bit of success at first, but I will be stunned if this goes anywhere.
Hope you're right.
Well,
this is a grift.
That's right.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. Does anybody know how long the Trump Media and Technology Group has been around?
It's been a while.
About an hour.
That's what it feels like.
It's been around for a little bit of time because they've already raised some money and from investors, some of whom did not know Mr. Trump was going to be involved.
I must say that they keep on calling it TMTG and they don't use Trump's name, which I think in and of itself says a lot, but also that it's so close to TMNT, which is, of course, all of us who grew up in the 80s and 90s know as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I see a correlation there as well.
Who was your favorite?
Leonardo. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. We'll continue our conversation with our terrific panel. We welcome your letters. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, Malcolm Nance, Judy Patrick. We certainly will go to your letters. Good morning. Thank you very much for being with us. We always enjoy your company, and quite frankly, without it, there'd really be no need for us to be here. So we thank you for being with us.
But we have a good time talking.
Yeah, that's true.
It's really great being back in the studio.
Shoot the breeze during the breaks is all very nice. We welcome your thoughts on stuff that's going on. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So meanwhile, while we were talking about former President Trump's new venture, we should also mention the golf probe, the New York Golf Club probe, and the district attorney in suburban Westchester County has subpoenaed property tax records related to one of the former president's golf clubs, signaling a previously unknown criminal inquiry into the Trump Organization. And when I read that, I thought, you know, they are hard to keep track of. After a while, they are hard to keep track of. In the town of Ossining, New York, which sets property tax rates for the course, received a subpoena from the Westchester District Attorney, Miriam Rocha, several weeks ago. According to an Ossining official, the town has been fully cooperative, said the official, who declined to be named because the subpoena was not public. A spokesman for Rocha declined to comment on Wednesday. The Westchester inquiry was first reported by the New York Times. The Trump Organization had challenged the property valuation for its Westchester club for every year since 2015. That process, used by many real estate companies, typically requires a company to submit data about its property's financial performance funds as evidence that it is worth less than the initial assessment. On August 12th, the Trump Organization said the challenge was settled with an agreement to reduce the club's tax valuations by about 30%. The valuation for 2020, for instance, was reduced from $13.7 million to $9.7 million, a change that could provide Trump with significant tax savings. According to a Trump Organization spokesperson, Kimberly Benza, that the Ossining Town government and a county judge had signed off on that settlement. Accordingly, the suggestion that anything was inappropriate is completely false and incredibly irresponsible, Benza said in a written statement. The Ossining Town official said the subpoena had been sent before the August agreement was finalized. So I realize, as I read this and as I was thinking about it last night, this seems to be like right like at the bottom of the barrel of horrible things, correct?
Yes.
But it's also but it adds to the overall picture,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the comments about these kinds of discussions between town governments and real estate developers goes on all the time. But and I suspect that there's got to be 50 cases involving Trump. I just thought it was humorous that it's in Ossining, which means it's only a short walk over to Sing Sing if he gets convicted of anything.
A short walk. Yeah. Malcolm?
Well, Mimi Rocha was I've met her a few times. She's an MSNBC contributor. She was until she won that position. And this had been coming up for some time. And I think this is just one of many cases that'll take place where you'll see that Donald Trump and the town of Ossining were cutting these sweetheart deals. He had been valuing that golf course at $1.4 million. And they he had been filed, you know, the state of New York had assessed it at something like $14 million. And then when he filed his statements for the presidency for 2 years in a row, he valued it at $50 million. There's documentation on all of this. No small agreement or settlement between the town of Ossining is going to stop the district attorney of that state of Westchester County turning that over to the attorney general of the state of New York. There is plenty of trouble coming for Donald Trump on this, and they'll probably find he did it to all his property.
Right. The problem is when you tell a bank your property is worth a high amount of money because you want a loan, and then you tell the local tax assessor that it's a low amount of money because you want a reduction in your taxes.
Alan?
As Nero Wolf once said, Nero Wolf is my contemporary hero. You know, he was written about in the 30s and 40s.
I love Nero Wolf.
Well, yeah, there's nobody better than Nero or Archie, his able assistant. However, his number one word is, and I would attach it to this brouhaha right now, fey.
Can you spell that for us?
Fey.
Fey.
Is that F-E-H?
P-F-U-I, fey.
I like it.
That's a Billy Crystal joke when he does the weather as an old man. The weather for tomorrow is going to be fuck.
No, I don't. You know, I think, look, these are going to come out. People are going to want the publicity. Pardon me, DAs and others. Nevertheless, of all the things he's done, I have to say, this does not rise to the top of the things he ought to be on trial for, including subverting the American democracy.
Right, and is it Donald Trump the person or the company? Which means if it's just the company, they'll pay a fine and that'll be that.
Yeah, it's the Trump Organization, but they've identified, certainly with the Weisselberg case, that the Trump Organization consisted of seven people, and they're all can be held liable, not just the entity.
I get that, but, you know, I'm not to prolong this any longer than it has to, but I'm just curious but none of this, all of this adds up, and yet none of it seems to really stick at all.
It paints an overall picture, and if you're inclined to be admire the picture, you're not going to be fazed by it, but if you're inclined to be disgusted by him on every step, it's just another brick on the load.
Right, the wheels of justice grind incredibly slowly. Is that the expression? I mean, nobody knows that better than Donald Trump.
That is true. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. I think we have time for one final topic. Let me check our timing. Yes, we do. So let's go to it this morning. I did want to talk to you about the kid vaccination plan for vaccination plan for children. White House unveils plans to roll out coronavirus vaccines for children ages 5 to 11. We've been talking about this, hoping and wanting this for a very long time. The campaign will be tailored to children and families, emphasizing smaller settings such as pediatricians' offices and outreach to parents. The White House said that they want to distribute vaccines to a huge group that has been ineligible so far to receive the coronavirus shots, 28 million children age 5 to 11, for those of you keeping score at home. The operation is slated to begin as soon as federal health officials sign off on a reduced dose of the Pfizer vaccine, which the Biden administration anticipates could come as soon as the first week of October, which I have to say, initially when they said that it could be out by Halloween, so that's not too bad. The timing is pretty close to what they had said months ago. White House officials said they had already acquired enough doses to vaccinate every child in that age group. They plan to make the specially packaged vaccine available at more than 25,000 pediatricians and doctors' offices, hospitals, pharmacies, community health centers, and school and community-based clinics. They will also undertake a campaign to educate parents more fully about the vaccines. That strategy is key to reducing the impact of the virus across the United States. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease specialist, said at a White House briefing, "The Delta variant has changed the game," he said, describing a recent study showing children are getting infected and transmitting the virus as readily as adults, even though 50% of them are asymptomatic. So we know how well this went over with adults. How will this go over with children?
It's going to be worse. And the reason it's going to be worse is that there's a whole class of parent. Oh, boy, am I going to catch it for this. But there's a whole class of parent who is afraid to come out and fight legitimately on their own. But when it comes to their kids, they will invoke the kids on a moment's notice with all of the pride and the self-centeredness that one can and say, "You don't do this to my kid." And you're going to see it. You're already seeing it. And you're going to see it in absolute force now.
Well, I saw a poll yesterday that suggested the number that I retained was that 25% of the people polled would not allow their children to get the vaccine. And they interviewed a couple, and the reason that they gave, at least on camera, was that they didn't think that they wanted their kids to be guinea pigs, that it's right out of the box with these vaccines and there's no large scale study. Now, that was the same with the adult doses, and now I believe there is enough evidence to show that they're effective and safe. So I'd like to think that once that happens with kids who are vaccinated, some of these people will turn around. But the broader question I have is what makes who was it that made it mandatory for kids to have to take all of these other shots
like the polio shot?
Yeah, all of them, one right after the other. At some point in time, it became mandatory, and people just did it. Why would this be different?
Because this has been polarized. That's why. Because it's now Democrats and Republicans. I'd like to see the crosshair, by the way.
Yeah.
On how many people of that 25% are Trumpers?
Yeah.
Malcolm.
Oh, well, you know, this is going to be another contentious issue now that the right-wingers have first been directed by QAnon and other Trump extremists to go into school boards. And they have been wreaking mayhem on some of these school board meetings, especially in the red states. Now you're going to tell them that their children have to get a vaccine in addition to all the other vaccines that they've accepted to go in there. You know, this is why we had, interestingly enough, Marin County about 4 years ago is where we had a massive outbreak of measles. And measles is a horrible disease. It literally burns your child's brain up. And it was
spiritual
community.
Did it burn your brain up?
Yeah, that explains a little piece of
self-deprecating humor.
Okay, well,
that explains a lot.
So I mean, your temperature, your fever gets so high that essentially, you know, you boil the brain. So, you know, I'm not a doctor though. My point is, of all the vaccines that you have to have your children in there, now people are drawing the line and they don't want any vaccinations. And you saw states like Ohio and others where they proposed getting rid of all vaccination mandates and leaving it up to the parents. Oh, this is going to end badly.
It really is unforgivable what the anti-vaccine movement has done here. And also this mayhem at school board meetings. We're seeing that all around upstate New York as well. And what people have to do, people who are smart and who care about the health of the greater community, they have to stand up to this and not let it fester, because it's festering and it's spreading.
Sure. People are afraid to stand up for it because you never know which one of these people might have a gun in the pocket.
Well, they shouldn't be. And let me give you some assistance for those of you who are going to these board meetings and are having trouble enunciating yourself. I'm going to give you some old Navy chief advice. Just tell people to shut up, sit down, or get out. And if they get after that, it's a matter for the police. We shouldn't have any disruption at these meetings. You know, it's political, and it's now crazy.
All right, we're out of time. I want to thank everybody for being with us. Very nice to have you all here. Alan, thank you. Good to see you.
Thanks, Joe. It's always been fun.
Be well. Ira Fussville, thanks for coming in.
Nice.
Appreciate it. Good to
Enjoyed
see you.
Enjoyed it. See you in a couple of weeks.
Great to have you in the studio. Judy, you too. Thank you very much for being here. Malcolm, always a pleasure. We'll be back with the Congressional Corner.